Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Roy Blyberg. I'm the Vice President for North America Business Development with ABS out of the Houston office. It's truly my pleasure to moderate this panel for the gas sector. You may or may not know, but the gas sector is actually, in fact, my favorite. I find it the most interesting. All due respect to the other industries and sectors, I think the gas sector is probably one of the most interesting because, quite honestly, it has significant importance to the global energy security. It has significant interest and leadership in the energy transition. If you think about it, if you look at the carbon value chain, you look at the hydrogen value chain, you look at the ammonia value chain, and much less the traditional LPG and LNG markets, it all has a very significant input to that market. And I also find that with all of that, it leads in technology. So technology is a big piece to the gas sector. So it truly is an honor and privilege to be here. What I would like to do is introduce the panel now, the distinguished guests, the panelists, true leaders in the industry. What I would like to introduce you one at a time, and then maybe you can take a minute to give a company profile, just a minute or two to give a company profile. So to my left is John LaCouris. He's the CEO of Dorian LPG. John, would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, Dorian LPG is a pure play LPG company. We operate ships on the spot market, and we do have a pool that we operate those vessels. We've been in business for 10 years since our IPO in the New York Stock Exchange, and we are very pleased to, close our 10-year anniversary in May.
So, okay. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. And to his left is Randy Givens with Navigator Gas, Executive Vice President. Randy?
Yep. Thanks, Roy. So Randy Givens, Executive Vice President of Investor Relations and Business Development at Navigator Gas, based in Houston, Texas. So we own 56 LPG carriers, shipping propane, ethane, ethylene, propylene, ammonia, butadiene, so various commodities. We also own 50% of an ethylene export terminal. We have a joint venture with Enterprise Products Partners down in Morgan's Point, just outside of Houston. So if you want to come see the terminal, see some ships, let me know next time you're in Houston, Texas.
And I highly recommend that. I got a nice tour from Randy, and it's actually a wonderful opportunity. And to his left is Ulstein Kalikev, the CEO of Flex LNG. Ulstein?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Ulstein Kalikev. I'm actually the CEO of two companies, one exciting company and one boring company. Let's start with the boring one. That's Flex LNG. So we are LNG shipping company listed here in New York. We are celebrating our fifth year since listing 2019. Total return since listing 250%. So we've been doing pretty well, fixing out our ships on long-term charters, 94% covered for this year, 50 years of minimum backlog, which we think will grow to about 70 years for the 13 LNG carriers, as there are some options attached to some of the ships. So this company paying out stable dividends. We paid out $370 million in dividends for 2022 and 2023. So it's a boring company in that sense. Avance Gas is LPG shipping company. We also have some ships ammonia ready. We are listed in Oslo, and we are more or less spot oriented, which was fantastic last year. Market cap maybe $800 million. We made $163.6 million of profit, and we paid out $165 million in dividends. We have been renewing the fleets, selling off the older ships, and taking delivery of newer, more fuel-efficient ships, and then also for MGCs that can carry ammonia as well as LPG.
Great. Thank you, Austin. Appreciate that. And at the very end, we have Spiros Liosis, from Chief Commercial Officer for Capital Product Partners.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Spiros. Spiros Liosis, Chief Commercial Officer of Capital Product Partners. I believe that Jerry did a much better job than I will do in order to present the company earlier on, but I think our position, we just underwent a transformational transaction whereby we dropped down all the LNG assets from the private company to the public company. The company now owns 9 LNG vessels which are currently trading and 9 that are due to be delivered until 2027. We also have 11 containers, but as I'm sure most of you know, I think the decision of the company is to move towards, let's say, a gas player and to expand into the gas segment further.
Thank you, Spiros. Were you guys able to hear him? For some reason, moderately. So I would a little bit closer or tighten up the mic. Yep. Yeah. Slow down a little bit. But so thank you very much for the introductions. I appreciate it. What I'd like to do is start the discussion on kind of on the bigger picture. I'll start with you, Ilstein, and maybe you could follow up, Spiros, if you want, on the big picture of LNG, of kind of where we are right now. If you look at the supply and demand, currently where we are and where we see the market going over the next 10 years, how do you see the market playing out, big picture?
I think if you first have a glance on it, you would be a bit scared because the order book is huge. It's like 300 ships, 50% of fleet order book, and usually this never goes well in shipping. And that's something we've also been concerned about, and that's why we have one ship coming open this year. The other 12 ships are on time charter, and I believe next ship I'm going to have open is probably 2027. So we have a lot of coverage near term because I do think the market will be a bit wobbly. It's soft now, driven by lower cargo economics. But this is usually spot market for LNG bottoms out in week 11 or 12. So it's more like a seasonal norm. But there are some mitigating factors for the big order book. It's about two things. It's a lot of new export capacity being built, and these are being built despite Biden. So the projects that Biden have stopped, those projects haven't contracted ships anymore. So of the order book, 93% of the order book is covered by contracts, so it's not really a speculative order book, and nobody's really doing speculative orders these days because ship prices have moved up from $180 to $260 million. And when you have suddenly gone from 2.5 years lead time to 4 years lead time, and interest rates are risk-free is 5%, that is putting a dent on further orders. And then the other mitigating factors is the fact that there are 200 old steamships, which are very inefficient, or new ships are 60% more efficient than the steamships, and these ships are now rolling off legacy 20-year contracts, will not be renewed, but be replaced by modern tonnage instead.
A very good point, Ilstein. I appreciate that. Actually, really interesting. Spiros, how do you see the market playing out over the coming years?
I think the view is more or less the same. We share the opinion, despite the difference on the ordering of ships. I think we have been a bit more active, and we actually have 6 vessels on order, which are open for business from 26, 27 onwards. I think we see some length in the market, 24, 25. But after that, as the new wave of LNG is coming, will come online, we believe that there will be significant demand for new ships. We see Southeast Asia as a major, let's say, demand driver going forward, as we think that, demand for switching from coal to LNG for power plants, for power generation, let's say, urban environmental restriction, improvement of urban environment will be a big driver, I believe, in that area. So we think that, we're quite bullish on the LNG story, and, we continue to support the market as much as we can.
Very good, Spiros. I would agree. Why don't we switch to LPG? So, John, what is your perspective on the outlook for LPG market? And I mean, we know the energy security and how LNG has a big play in it. Is there anything specifically to you and Randy? So you start, John, and then Randy, you can follow up a little bit. Where do you see the market currently and where it's headed, and how it may play with regard to global energy security?
LPG is produced along with LNG. It's it's a byproduct. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it needs to move. It is a very easy fuel to handle, transport, mm-hmm. and burn at home or in the industry. It is very efficient in calorific value. Mm-hmm. It is very good in as much as generating not only power but also cleaner emissions because it has a very low number of carbon molecules. Mm-hmm. It is a fuel that will be our transition fuel into the 2030s. Mm-hmm. And we think that's very important. And it is a very necessary fuel for the home cooking and home heating. And it is very important also for the industrial and petrochemical industry. So we see that LPG will be a bigger and bigger proportion of the fuel mix as we move on into the new age, the hydrogen age, as we see that the carbon age is slowly moving away from us, and we have to move on to the hydrogen age with ammonia and other other fuels, more greener. So, yes, there is a good growth. We've seen a great growth for the last year, and we expect a great growth this year.
Great.
It will continue, I think, in the foreseeable future. The exploration of oil and gas, in particular, no more gas than oil, is going to produce more LPG, and that will be probably part of the fuel mix for the future.
Very good. Thank you, John. Randy, do you see it as similar, or is it?
Yeah, as John touched on, and similar to the LNG market, LPG certainly got supercharged, right, in 2020 with the whole Russia-Ukraine invasion there. And since then, we've seen more and more disruptions, obviously the Panama Canal, the Red Sea. So that market remains fragmented and remains disrupted. So for LPG and especially propane, John spoke mostly on that, so I'll touch more on the other commodities we carry. For example, ethane, right? That is a commodity that no one produces for ethane, but when you get wet gas, you get methane with C2, ethane as well. And where you see a lot of the money, a lot of the invested capital from the midstream companies going, it is for fractionation capacity to separate those to recover the ethane, as well as export capacity. So we see the ethane market continuing to grind higher, as well as ethylene exports out of the U.S. So petchems, olefins, that's really been our focus, and we see a lot of that rising both in terms of the U.S. production and excess supply of those commodities, as well as international demand, right? There's always going to be a premium into the European and Asian markets for ethane and ethylene compared to the domestic prices here in the U.S. Also, ammonia, right? That trade was massively disrupted with Russia-Ukraine back in 2022. We had two ships carrying ammonia. Now we have 10 vessels carrying ammonia. So that market has certainly been the most disrupted in terms of the three segments that we operate in. If you look at LPG, if you look at olefins, petchems, and then on the ammonia side. So, yeah, we think 2024 will continue in that regard in terms of a supply demand, I guess a supply shortage on the demand growth.
Great. Thank you, Randy. Actually, you said two things that caught my interest. Exports and ammonia. So I'm going to have to phrase this in a little to make the give the panel an opportunity to discuss it. But I mean, speaking of exporting, is so LNG is a little bit more more difficult. And I actually know the Biden administration in January put a temporary pause on pending approvals for LNG exports for non-FTA countries. So this question is kind of, I'm leaning towards Spiros and Ulstein. Spiros, I'll give you the opportunity to maybe speak first. It may, although that temporary pause may not actually directly affect, maybe it does, you tell me, but I got the impression you also, Ulstein, I'll see it directly affecting your business as we speak. But big picture-wise, what do you think it's going to do to the market, and how do you think that's going to play out eventually with regard to that pause lasting a certain time?
I think you are right. It doesn't affect our business in the short term. We don't see any actual effect in the market until 27, where effectively the new projects would come online, or 28, the new projects that would seek FTA approval. Of course, there is a question, you know, this is under the assumption that this will not affect existing projects under construction and the request for expansion of the FTA approval. So there are a couple of projects that have approval until 26, 27, and they will need to expand for 1 or 2 years. I assume that they will not be affected, as you know, that would probably be devastating for them. But it's definitely not good news. I think as it was obvious, you know, the happiest guys were probably the Qataris and secondary the Russians. We saw Qatar came out 5 days after increasing the new project capacity. And obviously, I think Russia is quite happy as well, because it means that their significance in supplying Europe with LNG will still remain quite high, as it is today. And they expect to increase over time as things normalize. So I think for us, it's not a positive, definitely. You know, I think the way we calculated, there are around 80 to 90 million tons of LNG that are on risk, not being produced in the U.S., projects that are not FID yet, that they are seeking FTA approval.
Correct.
That they will not be able to get the approval. The good scenario is that for us is that this will be, it's a pause, so the pause will last for 1 year or 1 or 2 years, and this will be revoked at some point.
Yep,
so effectively that will be, we'll see a continuation of the project. Otherwise, I would say, you know, trying to see the only positive thing I see, and this will go back to Randy, I think it would probably be ammonia will probably benefit more than anyone else based on the, after this. Having a lot of cheap LNG, cheap gas in the U.S., an excess of cheap gas in the U.S., ammonia will probably be the only product to export after.
Could be. Yeah. Interesting. So, Sin, do you have a position on that, or is it, does it affect your business?
Oh, it's basically you have some U.S. projects which probably will be delayed by about a year. You know, if Trump wins, he'll probably remove the ban the first day in office, and I do think Biden also will remove this eventually because there are political support of having this rebooted. The projects will continue to fill up SPAs for offtake, so that means once the moratorium is lifted, there will be a lot of projects in the U.S. where they have close to 100% coverage on offtake and are ready to go. You know, ships haven't been built for this, but it would be better if they moved forward, because actually today you can build an LNG plant quicker than you can build an LNG ship. You know, I think the record was Venture Global with, I believe, 28 or 29 months from FID to first cargo. If you are contracting LNG ships today, you're starting to look at order book for 28. So in the event the projects were being moved forward this year, you could have some first cargoes, probably 27, which there wouldn't be enough yard capacity to fill up the sufficient ships for export of these cargoes, which means that a lot of the cargoes would have to be contracted on existing tonnage, which would make the supply-demand balance of shipping tighter from 27 into 28. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, right now the price of new ships, Spiros knows this very well with the ships in capital, it's quite expensive to build LNG ships today. So you except for you guys, there's not really many people building them on speculation. So we would like to see it move forward. We do think maybe Qatari will utilize the opportunity to add more volumes, and it could also potentially put some extra pressure on some of these projects in Africa, especially Mozambique, which can see a window of moving forward quicker, because they need, for Mozambique LNG, they reserved 17 slots at the yards. These haven't been confirmed, so they probably want to confirm those slots prior to the U.S. projects moving forward.
Oh, that's interesting. Very good. Thank you, Steen. Very interesting. I think... tightening a market is going to be very, very, very interesting and very difficult in the near future on that one, I think. So when we're talking about export now, I'm going to actually jump back to, it actually came up multiple times, ammonia. What I'd like to do maybe is give everybody an opportunity to discuss, if you think about ammonia as being a means to decarbonize even onshore with coal gas plants, and the need for ammonia to be moving towards the Pacific. Maybe what I'll do is, if it's okay with you, I'll start with you, Randy, since you mentioned it first, I think, and maybe we'll go Randy and then John, and then of course everybody's welcome to give the audience an opinion of what you think ammonia is going to do, the market's going to, how it's going to grow, and then most importantly, how your company is gearing up for it.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. So ammonia for us is a big part of our business today, and it will certainly be bigger 3, 4, 5 years from now. So first, in terms of today, we are shipping a lot of gray ammonia. 95% of that is for fertilizer production. So most of that is on our handy-sized vessels, a couple mid-size trading ammonia as well. But we have 9 vessels, or we have 10 now, actually, the most of any ship owner in the world. So we're currently trading ammonia. Now, we also believe ammonia will be a future fuel and arguably the future fuel for shipping. So with that, we have an approval in principle for an ammonia-fueled ship design. And we recently invested in Azane Fuel Solutions, a company that is doing ammonia bunkering, right, building barges, starting in Scandinavia, and then will work its way to the U.S. Gulf, to Singapore, ARA, Middle East. East and other places. And then fourth and finally, we're also looking at investing in a blue ammonia project in the U.S. because, again, we think that clean ammonia will certainly be a big driver of the ammonia growth. Right now, the ammonia market globally is 180, 190 million tons. Only about 10% of that, 18 to 20 million tons, is seaborne. So we think, you know, 5, 7, 10 years from now, that ammonia trade goes to maybe 300 million tons, so maybe a 50% increase. But the seaborne trade goes to maybe 80 million tons, so a 4x increase. So with that, you know, we want to further participate in the ammonia transportation of blue ammonia, you know, sending it to Asia for co-firing their coal plants, sending it to Europe, stripping out the N for their hydrogen economy. So ammonia is and will continue to be a big part of Navigator's business.
Very good, Randy. Actually, that's exciting. That's actually really, that's a lot of growth right there. John, do you see the same working with ammonia?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, ammonia is probably for the future is a way to transport hydrogen. So yeah, that's the most important thing. It's going to be an industrial feedstock. Mm-hmm. It's going to be used for power generation and probably as a fuel substitute at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. So there is a future for ammonia. As Randy said, there's right now gray ammonia or black. There's going to be blue ammonia. Most of the production in the United States is going to eventually turn into blue ammonia and it's going to be much cheaper than the green ammonia that is being advertised around the world. So it's going to have an advantage.
I see people nodding their heads, John.
And it's going all over the world. It's going to go to Europe. It's going to go to China. It's going to go to Japan, Korea, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a big opportunity there. Now, LPG ships, VLGCs, as we call them, these very, very large gas carriers, can do ammonia as well. It's not a new business for us. Mm-hmm. We carry gases. We can carry ammonia just like we can carry LPG, propane and butane. So it is reasonably easy. We will upgrade our ships, even though we have put an order for a new ship, much bigger ship, purely for ammonia, but she can do, of course, LPG. We want to wait it out and see how the market develops. We will convert our ships, and we will use some of our existing tonnage and the future tonnage that we have to transport ammonia in the future. So we think there is an additional play for the LPG fleet.
Very nice, John. That's really interesting. Maybe I'll go down to Spiros and then Olson if you guys would like to discuss it. He brought up a really good point about actually multi-purpose gas carriers. I think that so if you wanted to comment and maybe necessarily about what your companies are doing now or how you see the market about the dual function or dual multiple cargoes, and then also maybe on size. Because I think Randy and John, they have a certain size in mind probably, but what about from your perspective with regard to ammonia? Are they going to continue to get larger and larger?
Yeah, I think as the trade increases, yeah, obviously the size will increase as well. I mean, currently I think most of the ammonia trade is done on handy and mid-size vessels. I think going forward, VLACs will probably be the major, the workhorse, let's say. Mm-hmm. I think the same. Obviously, the current VLGC fleet can be used; it can be utilized against that at a lower capacity level. But we see it as a market that's definitely of interest to us, and it's something that we are looking into further investments going forward. It would be ammonia primarily as a co-firing for power generation. I think that would probably be the primary use going forward for the next 10 years. After that, for bunkering, we see a few challenges that we have. Let's say for us, we see them as a bit difficult to overcome, again, going in the next 10 years. But the demand from Asia for co-firing will be substantial, so we believe in the ammonia trade as a whole, and we're looking to investing into that as well.
Very good. Christine, also?
Yeah. So, of course, we don't fall in love with our ships. We fall in love with our shareholders. So we are quite pragmatic about selling and buying. So we sold two ships this year. They are 2008 built VLGCs. They can carry ammonia. Was bought 2 years old, 2010. N block, 140 million. We now sold both of them 14 years later for 127 million. So there hasn't been much depreciation on those ships. We contracted two VLGCs with ammonia filling in 2021. So we were supposed to take delivery of these in March and May this year, but we sold them. Contract them at 78 million in 21, upgraded them with ammonia for 2 million, so that's 80 million each, and now we sold them for 120 million. So what we rather are a bit more bullish on the ammonia is for smaller size. So we bought four ships last summer, MGCs, so about half the size, 61.5 million. So I'm happy to read that Spiros is buying the next couple of ships in the series for $67 million for delivery in 27. We have delivery 25 and 26. So we are, right now, we've been selling seven ships and we've been buying some new ships. So that's our focus, but we do think, you know, ammonia needs to be heavily subsidized to work as a fuel for shipping. Aviation is more important to green up. LNG today, spot price LNG is about $8 per million BTU. That means you can buy LNG at less than $50 per barrel of oil equivalent, while diesel is a lot more expensive. So LNG right now is the best fuel for ships, dual-fuel ships. Ammonia will come later, but once it comes, I rather agree with Randy that it will be on the smaller size, the MGCs. It seems like Spiros is agreeing on that. And I just bet a steak dinner with John's CFO on a similar conference in Oslo last week that our MGCs are going to carry ammonia before his VLGCs are going to do it.
Great. Thank you, Ulstein. I appreciate that. So as you mentioned shareholders, I need to start talking a little bit about chartering and long-term charters. It made me think, actually, about how that works. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand long-term charters are a little bit more difficult to come across now. Midterms are a little bit more common. Maybe LNG and LPG are a little bit different. The panels have very new ships. So there's a lot of new ships coming out, but there's a lot of competition, some of the older tonnage. Out of curiosity, maybe I'll start with Spiros, and then you can work your way down if you guys would like to comment on it. So the question is essentially with regard to long-term charter versus mid-term charter, is there, for this older tonnage, when you have these new, let's say you have new gas carriers coming onto the market, they're competing really strongly with the older tonnage. What do you see coming from the older tonnage? Do you see investments into that with retrofits or some type of ESD, energy saving devices modifications that are pretty much optimized already, probably? But how do you see the older tonnage competing with the new tonnage?
Yeah, I think the ships that we are building right now, they are of very, very high spec.
Yes.
So currently we have everything that you can put on an LNG carrier today. Yes. Going forward, I think the difference in the market will probably be useful life of the asset. So the way that we would deal with it would probably be reducing the useful life of the asset. So instead of the 35 years that used to be in the LNG segment, we're probably talking about 25-year lifetime. I think that's the first move that, let's say, a sensible owner would take. And then in terms of future modifications, you know, for these vessels, it's difficult to see what can be done in order to improve the performance. Mm-hmm. I think we have reached a level where actual performance is extremely, extremely good, mm-hmm. especially when you compare it to anything else. So, you know, in the LNG market, we have it's a three-tier market. So we have the steamships, the DFDEs, and the two-stroke vessels. So the steamships and the DFDEs still account for more than 50% or about 50% of the market today. So they will need to be phased out. So let's start talking about that. And then an issue that I see going forward for part of our fleet and obviously for the older fleet as well would be methane slip. Mm-hmm. But I believe that the technology is there to solve that. And that's something that we are actively looking into for our first dry docks.
Actually, that's a really good point. Olsen, do you see the same? Do you see that the older fleet, I mean, that actually the modifications to address methane slips are a great idea. I mean, that's a really important thing. Do you see that the older tonnage will eventually be able to compete with some of the newer tonnage, or is it just be phased out?
I think, first, you have two different types of ships who are legacy ships. It's steam ships. They don't have any methane slips, yes. But they just burn a hell of a lot of fuel. So it means you have a high CO2 emissions, and it's not really possible to retrofit these ships. They are 20, 25 years old. They have a steam engine. You know, it's a long time since James Watt invented the improved steam engine. So really, it's those ships are dead, and scrapping is going to go up a lot. And then you have this other part of the legacy fleet, which is the dual fuel diesel electric, which is more efficient than a steam, burn less fuel. But still, it's not really the most efficient in terms of thermal efficiency. Just to kind of simplify it, a steam engine has a thermal efficiency of around 35%, and then we are at around 40-ish on a dual fuel diesel electric, and then we are at 50-52% thermal efficiency on a two-stroke engine. So the problem with the diesel electrics, as Spiros alluded to, is the methane slip, because they don't combust cleanly, which means you get methane in the residue of the exhaust, and methane is very potent. So methane is about 85 times worse than CO2 on a 20-year cycle, and then 27, 28 times worse on a 100-year cycle. So that means if you have small pieces of methane emission in your exhaust, really you're destroying your kind of CO2 footprint. So just to give you an example, a dual fuel diesel electric has a methane slip around 4 grams per kilowatt hour. On the mega ships, we have 9 out of 13 in our fleet. Methane slip is guaranteed to be less than 0.2 grams per kilowatt hour. That's a 95% reduction in methane emissions. So that's how big numbers we are talking. And that means, yes, there might be some devices to reduce the methane emission, like the ICER. So maybe you can reduce it from 4 grams to 2 grams. But still, it's a huge emission in terms of kind of the potency of these emissions. We also have a similar issue with ammonia carriers. Nobody's talking so much about it these days. But ammonia slip, much worse than methane slip, around 280 times worse than CO2. So if you if you're not combusting it cleanly and you have a small trace gases of this in the exhaust gas, you know, you're destroying all the green credential of that fuel.
Yeah, very good point. Exactly. Randy, he commented about the new construction and deliveries lasting a life of 2025 instead of 3035. Actually, how do you see old tonnage versus new tonnage? And feel free to comment about the other environmental issues associated with that.
Okay. Yeah, we have three of our original 5 vessels built in 2000 that we still operate, right? They're coming up on 24 years of age. They're certainly less fuel efficient than our more modern tonnage built in 2018, 2019, but they still compete, right? And when you have a smaller ship, the total fuel burn is a lot less, and you're going shorter hauls and all these other factors. So it's not as huge of a difference. That said, when you start putting in the high-performance silicone paints, the propeller upgrades, there's a lot of efficiency metrics that can really tighten that gap. So an older ship will always be less fuel efficient and burn more fuel than a much more modern ship. But in our sector, the differences aren't extreme. So that's why even a new build, the designs are better and all of these things, but it's not necessarily a game changer.
Right, and size makes a difference. That's right. Yeah. John, you see it similar? Do you see it similar with regard to the older tonnage versus new? Still the older tonnage on the LPG side being competitive?
The sustainability and emissions profile of every fleet is very important.
Yes.
We have to live with this. We have to improve our profile. We do that every day. With operational and technological kind of improvements on the ships. Yep. There's so many things that one can do. We do have a relatively modern fleet, so most of the fleet was built in 2015, so it's relatively new, eco engines, and we are using all the usual ways of improving the sustainability of those vessels to be able to trade until 2040 and beyond. We have already incorporated scrubbers. Scrubbers is the precursor of carbon capture. So effectively, we are kind of thinking ahead for the future and how we're going to manage our profile. But, you know, also new building ships are not as great as they should be. They should be a lot better because their profile is nothing to really write home about, because all they have is maybe a dual fuel engine and a shaft generator. That's not enough. Mm-hmm. You need a lot more for a ship that's going to be built in 2028 and is going to be trading until 2050.
Correct.
This is not good. So we are not so much in favor of building new ships. We'd like to upgrade our existing ships and see how things develop in the future and decide whether there's going to be better technologies to
invest in. A realistic approach, absolutely, John. Understood. So we have a few more minutes left, and so what I'd like to do is give each of you guys an opportunity to maybe express some of the challenges that you have, maybe the top three challenges or a major challenge that you see coming towards the gas industry, and so what we can actually get prepared for. And if it's okay with you, John, I'll start with you. I'll go this direction and so keep it even. And tell me a little. It could be sustainability. You just talked about the challenge, but please do. Please say as you see it.
Just refine it even more.
Sure.
Digitalization is an important part of our business right now to improve our profile, because we need to know what's going on the ship all the time, every single minute.
Yeah.
So along with digitalization, you need crew education. You need crew that is able to deal with those things.
I hear crew all the time.
So this is the most important thing that we worry about.
Yeah.
Our crew education is the most important to enable our crews to be able to cope with these new technologies that we are installing continuously. It's a continuous improvement that we're doing. Decarbonization is the second thing, maybe the third, because I said digitalization, I said crew, and I said decarbonization.
Thank you, John. Very good, actually. Very good points.
Sure.
Did he steal your thunder, Randy?
A little bit, but that's okay. three challenges. I can think of three others. I think increasing U.S. export capacity, right, that before it becomes a bottleneck. So that's why we are increasing our export capacity of ethylene together with Enterprise. They're building out a new ethane export facility over in Beaumont. So that's going to be a challenge, but you can see a lot of the midstream companies starting to get ahead of that, fortunately. Secondly, I think if you order the wrong vessel with the wrong future fuel, right, that is not something you want to do. So being very thoughtful and patient in ordering. And then third, just matching vessel supply growth with demand growth, right? I think we see a lot of the demand for blue ammonia and clean ammonia and these other things. Vessels usually get delivered pretty close to on time. Big projects usually get delayed, right? And so we saw this a lot in LNG, right, back when I was an analyst a decade ago, and Gorgon, Wheatstone, Gladstone, all these other LNG projects that had massive vessel orders to, oh, yeah, they're matched up with this. Well, those vessels started getting delivered, and the projects got delayed by 2 years, and what happened to the LNG market? So I think that should put some caution for anyone interested in doing massive new build orders, anyone to my left especially, to really be careful about matching supply growth with demand growth.
Yeah, I don't think I have time for three topics there, but, you know, sustainability is also a opportunity, because people are these days, you know, there's a lot of political ambiguity about kind of what targets you're going to meet and whether those targets are achievable. Keep in mind, decarbonization in shipping is incredibly difficult. You have a heavy ship going through water, so you have a lot of resistance in terms of the water you're going through. And then keep in mind also, shipping is by far the most environmentally friendly way of moving big goods. So, but this creates opportunity that people are reluctant to invest. You know, John here is a bit, he rather focus on his existing ships. We are a bit paranoid in terms of committing, and if we get a good price, we might be seller as well as buyers of new ships. And you know, this is a industry problem, and which is holding back investments. Usually when ship owners are making a lot of money, they also contract a lot of ships, but contracting today is more muted. We have had a big boom in containers and LNG, but that's kind of put on pause now, even though ship owners are very cash rich. So I think, you know, usually when you have a low level of investments, you also get good returns. So that's why I'm a bit upbeat about the prospects here, as long as Spiros is not contracting more ships.
I don't know. Let's hear what he thinks, Spiros.
No, for us as well. I mean, obviously, CPR pricing has been a consideration, and, you know, we have been ordering through the cycle. I mean, someone could argue, I'm sure Øystein has argued before, that $220 million was a very expensive price for an LNG carrier.
That's a challenge. That is definitely a challenge. That's right.
So for us, definitely. I mean, asset prices are a challenge, and CPR capacity is also a challenge. I think the secondary is fleet replacement. There is a need to replace the fleet, especially on the LNG segment. Together, matching with the capacity required for the new projects, I think that's a big challenge for the market, and I think that will be difficult to cope in the next years. As I said previously, methane slip, it's an easy cut for the industry. There are easy solutions to it, but in order to implement those, I think they will require some time. And the third one for me, it's probably going into the new energy segment. I think we are not seeing enough FIDs. I'm sure Randy is doing whatever he can, and I think they are doing their part, but we should be seeing a lot more FIDs for blue projects worldwide.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Spiros. Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate everybody's time. Please join me in thanking the panel. Thank you. Thank you all. Great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Roy.